Senate Committee on Revenue and School Finance. Agenda, February 23, 1981, 1:30 p.m., Hearing Room 137. Public Hearing, Senate Bill 68, Create Warrant Procedure for Unpaid Timber Taxes. Senate Bill 48, Use Fuel Tax Definition.
Do they draft hike? Or you can go.
Okay. First order of business today will be Senate Bill 68, which we held over from last Thursday's schedule. We have some proposed amendments. Come on up, Jerry. And Mr. Bartz, perhaps the best way to proceed from this point would be to go over the bill again very briefly, as far as what it does and what the department is trying to get at, and then explain the amendments that you have prepared for the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Bartz, Tax Division, Department of Justice. Let me refresh your memory on how the severance tax works. It's a self-assessed process, just like the income tax. You cut the timber, and at the point you measure it, then you're liable for the tax. The owner of the timber at that time is liable for the tax. He takes a table, which is published by the department on market, from a market study, and calculates his tax, and then sends it into the department. Now, if that's incorrect, the department then notifies him through a procedure called a proposed assessment, and then there is a right to an administrative hearing and a determination and that sort of thing. And then after that, the tax is assessed, and then the department has to collect it. The other situation which occurs is where a person's cut timber do not make a return and do not intend to make a return. That's the smaller group, but it's because there are those who do this. In that instance, the department then determines to the best of their ability what the tax is it's due, sends out a notice, and then the administrative procedure goes into gear again. And at the conclusion of the administrative proceeding, when all of the questions supposedly of appeal are over, then there still exists the tax to be collected. At that point, in the income tax, there is a warrant procedure, which is in a sense a lien, which is docketed like a judgment. This Senate Bill 68 asks for the same thing. It asks that after the administrative proceeding is all through, that the department then be able to docket a warrant and collect it as if it were a judgment. The provisions are exactly the same as they are in the income tax, and the remedies are the same.
Jerry, could you are you familiar enough with each section to kind of just in a few sentences explain what each section is doing, as we particularly in the first part of the bill?
Right. Yes.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Thursday.
One of the doing is good to move the amendments, and then let him tell as he goes through it, tell what it does.
Are these
the amendments a rather minor feature, Senator Thursday?
Yeah, it might be helpful if we know what it does now,
right,
as to understanding then what.
If you'll turn to page four of your bill, the printed bill, line 27, you'll see that there is material which is to be deleted from the present existing Western Oregon severance tax statute. The amendment does the same thing for the Eastern Oregon severance tax. It's the same language and the same. The purpose of this is is because that, and I'll read it, penalty, interest, and taxes for prior delinquent quarters shall be paid in full chronologically before any payment shall be credited to any subsequent quarter. if you get a controversy, for example, in a former period of time, and you pay your current tax, it has to be first applied to that former period of time, and it causes some administrative difficulties for the taxpayer, and we don't think it's a worthwhile feature of the law and are asking that it be removed in both the Eastern Oregon Severance Tax and the Western Oregon Severance Tax. Are there any questions on the Section 4 on page 1 of the bill is the, do you want me to go over the old language or the...
The new
language. Section 6 then on page 2 is a technical provision to allow the department to release property from liens when there's no good possibility of collecting. And what that does is add the liens which are under the deferred property tax features that are in other acts. It just adds those sections to it. Then Section 7 is the warrant provisions for the same purpose. That's all under.
Okay, again, five. Now in dealing with a severance tax, many times the contracts all or the lien going against the property, or it belongs.
It goes against the owner of the timber at the time. Now, if he has real property, there are provisions where you can, if you get
so
a judgment.
So it'd be if somebody contracted to buy the logs, the lien would be on the buyer and not the seller.
Yes, that's right. It's whoever owns the timber at the time of harvest.
Well, yes, can I ask that question?
Let's say that you fail to pay the severance tax. Mm-hmm. That's really the duty of the owner of the property that the trees are on, isn't it?
No.
It's the duty of the person who buys it.
Yeah, who owns it at the time it's severed. Yeah.
Well, okay, that's the way you've obligated them. Okay.
Sure seems like it would be simpler if the onus was on the...
Onus on the seller.
Well, you could
let me just finish. If the onus was on the seller... When this harvest took place, in other words, as part of their contract, they have to provide that when this sale took place, that was going to be paid, because it's the owner of the property that's getting the consideration that we're looking at a severance versus an ad valorem approach, aren't they? And yet we shifted the burden strictly to the buyer of the property. And wouldn't you have a better hold if the owner of the property had a duty to see that this was paid before the sale was actually... Before he allowed the trees to be cut, at least there was a bond put up that this was going to be paid.
I think the problem is semantical, Senator.
All right, let's try it again.
The owner of the timber. Now that may be the owner of the land.
Could be.
Or you can
be.
Sell timber separately from the land and hold title to it as real property. And that was the one reason when the bill was being. Enacted initially the severance tax that was given. Another possibility was that there was some discussion at that time of extending the severance tax to public timber, that is to federal timber, because the incidents would then fall on the person severing the timber and not the federal government, so it would be a constitutional tax. And for various policy reasons that was not done, but that's possible under this particular language.
Thanks.
And the department, I feel, thinks that this is a satisfactory way to do it, but they do feel that the warrant procedure, once all of the administrative appeal provisions are out of the way, makes sense from a standpoint of
reasonable collection procedures.
Senator Trope?
I noticed that this particular provision was not put in the bill that created the Western Oregon Severance Tax, but it does exist for other kinds of taxes. And I'm wondering why it's needed now. And if it's used very often in the administration of the Eastern Oregon Severance Tax, is it something that is used quite often there? And why is it needed for this particular severance tax?
Well, I'll let Mr. Lance speak to that too, but it was an oversight, as far as we can tell, in enacting the severance tax, that it was not included. The experience in collecting the severance tax, it was a new tax, it was a completely new shift and emphasis, and the experience that Washington had wasn't that helpful. And it's just now that we're beginning to get into the collection problems. The other portion of that is that it's a small group of people that are involved in not paying their taxes. I don't know.
Will this be an effective remedy?
This is an effective remedy, yes. And the example I gave before, I believe, of the company from Washington that came in and incurred $10,000 worth of severance taxes, not paying it. I filed suit in the tax court, and they answered last week, which means that in about 2 or 3 months we will go to trial. And then there'll be another period before that's decided, and then we won't have anything more than we would have if we had a warrant proceeding.
Do similar things happen under the Eastern Oregon Severance Tax?
I don't know. Mr. Lance, perhaps you can speak to that.
Yes, I'm Jim Lance. I'm with the Department of Revenue in the Timber Section. We do issue warrants quite regular for Eastern Oregon Severance. Again, as Jerry pointed out, it was after due process. In other words, we go through our billing stage. If they do not pay within a reasonable length of time, we make a personal contact. Then if we can locate any assets, we do issue the garnishment, or the warrant, I'm sorry, the warrant, and go ahead then and either lien the property or attach to assets, whichever is necessary. But it is commonly practiced. One remedy that we're looking at, and one comment the committee asked the other day, was about revenue impact, what we're talking about here on Western Oregon Severance. Of course, that's a very evasive thing to address sometimes, because who's to say what the revenue impact is? But as a background, we currently have $250,000 of accounts assigned to the collection division, our own collection division, if you will, that have not been collected to date in regards to Western Oregon Severance. This represents only 175 taxpayers, but they'll average $780 per account, or 280 accounts, if you will, each quarter or period standing on its own. And I see this as a increasing factor. I personally have only been in timber tax for a period of a little over a year. When I first came on board, we were getting very few part pays or no remits. Now it seems like it's getting to be more and more of a common type factor. I think part of this is the economy. I don't know why, it just happens. Also, in the way of an impact, I cannot give you an accurate answer. I can share with you some of my experiences within the collection modes. When I was in the field and involved with collections, primarily with income tax, withholding taxes, cigarette tax, amusement device tax, basically any other tax program, we found when a warrant was issued, approximately 50% of those accounts would resolve themselves within the first 30 days. Now, when I say resolve themselves, that was either paid in full or make pay arrangements. So I do think there is a high need and a high success ratio for the warrant. Now, again, we do not arbitrarily or propose arbitrarily issuing warrants. The warrant should only be issued if there is assets that can be located or something to lean against, rather than just throwing paper out. As a safety factor, I might also add, to be effective, the warrant has to be docketed within the county where the property is located at, the real property. It cannot be just filed any place and lien everything. So it's not a tool that's going to be misused, if you would.
Senator Durstedt?
Just to get all the semantics straight, I want to get it through my mind. The tax is the obligation of the owner of the timber.
Yes.
Other questions? Jerry, were there other things? We have the resident mail thing. Another
I understand that that was something that the committee wanted to discuss. That's on page 6. The other provisions, I would say, of the Act are essentially those to bring it in line with the income tax warrant procedures and the amount of interest, monthly interest, and or delinquencies. There's nothing unusual about those.
So it is the same as the income tax?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, you and Senator, I say Senator Dern said that that may not be clear when the original bill setting up the Western Oregon Separate Sentence was passed. Do you remember whether we discussed this or not?
The mail?
No, the
warrant.
The warrant.
I cannot remember.
Mr. Chairman, oh, yes. I served on the subcommittee of the House Revenue Committee that wrote the severance tax bill, and I don't remember it, this issue being discussed.
Yeah,
I think we overlooked it. It was late in the session, and we were really under a lot of pressure, and I don't remember it being discussed.
It was a small issue compared to the others, and besides being a severance tax, I think in the back of everybody's mind, the money kind of fell out of the tree as it fell over, and you simply collected it there. You know, it just seemed to be the lesser of the problems with an industry that was split and a whole bunch of other problems. That
but it was in the west, in the Eastern Oregon severance tax, and has been.
Okay, other questions? Now, to your amendments, then.
The amendment...
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I think... You want to talk about in section 13 on page 6 is a sort of policy consideration concerning the change from registered mail to just regular mail.
And that's
not in the amendments, is it?
It's really a negligible thing because the number that are involved are so small that I think the reason that they asked for this when they were drafting the bill was that a cost factor. I'm not sure it's worth your...
Well...
Mr. Chairman,
okay,
if I may...
That's why they requested having it taken out.
If I may, too, it's rather odd, this... And I know the expression's not good, but if you could excuse the expression of a house cleaning, this particular provision right here pertains only to Eastern Oregon severance tax. It is not a Western Oregon severance tax requirement. So we're talking basically, if you will, of 250 to 300 accounts only.
Okay, so
and we're talking about a fair to file only, not about any other type of adjustment, strictly on a fair to file.
Okay, so in Western Oregon severance, you do not have to use registered
mail? No, sir. We operate under 305-265, okay, as we do with all of our other tax programs.
And there's really no advantage to the registered mail, for that matter.
All right.
Well, there is a degree of notice.
Well, but by the time this occurs... You see, the whole process has been through the administrative process and the proposed assessment and the assessment, and so you're really getting to the point where you're talking about a few that don't intend to pay at any time, and trying to chase them down with registered mail or get them to accept it is just as difficult as regular mail. But I mean, it's committee decision.
So what you're saying is by the time you get to this step, you've been in contact with them and...
Tried to get them to file returns and work with them. And it's the people that just don't intend to pay.
Okay, well... And it only deals with Eastern Oregon, this particular section.
Yeah. Right.
But the Western Oregon law does not have that in it?
No, sir.
Okay. Then you want to discuss your amendments very quickly?
The amendment... If you turn to page 4, in subsection 2, or section 10, sub 2, we have asked that you take out the phrase, from the Western Oregon severance tax, penalty interest and taxes for prior delinquent quarters shall be paid in full chronologically before any payments shall be credited to any subsequent quarter. And as I explained before, that it's an awkward administrative provision that often catches people in that have a controversy with paying their tax, and they find that it's applied to a quarter that they don't want it to apply.
Yeah, and then you have trouble if you accept it otherwise.
That's
trying
right.
to figure out where you were.
And the amendment does is add or delete the same language from the Eastern Oregon severance tax so that they will both be in conformity.
Okay.
Well, this amendment...
The one in the bill is for Western Oregon severance. The one that was oversight that we're putting in the amendment for is Eastern Oregon severance to make the two consistent.
Okay, so the two pages, the only new language on the new, on the two pages is actually the deletion of the language on page two?
Yes.
I move the amendment.
Well, okay, the... Okay, do you understand? Okay, I think we can go ahead and adopt these and just keep these in printed form until our work session so we don't have to have the bill re-engrossed just to put these in. But Senator Jernstedt moves that the committee adopt the amendments proposed by the Department of Revenue dated 2/18/81. Is there discussion? Is there objections to that amendment? All members being present, no objections, it's so ordered. Anything else about the bill? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have people sign up, Peggy? Okay. Gary, did you have you looked at this bill carefully? Why don't you come on up? It's not that we're just dying to hear your testimony, but I just want to know if you've looked at the bill.
Gary Carlson, Associated Oregon Industries. Yes, Mr. Chairman, we've looked at the bill. We've had our committee look at the bill and have no real objection to it. I think that the case for doing away with registered mail is not terribly strong given the number of accounts we're talking about. And I frankly think from the standpoint of the taxpayer that we'd feel more comfortable with not removing that provision. But
that does just apparently apply to the Eastern Oregon. And Western Oregon, it's already out of the law, as I understand it.
Yeah, and that came in, incidentally, as I understand it, the old Omnibus 833 bill a couple of years ago, dealing with personal income tax. We'd just not like to see return receipt request type mail provisions chipped away at year after year until we don't have them anymore. I think it's important that person, since we're talking about penalties and fairly stiff interest charges, have the best opportunity to have notice that he's in arrears.
Well, I sent one out not too long ago, return receipt requested. Some of it was quite a bit in the arrears, and I just got the letter back. I don't know what to do with the receipt. they didn't open the letter either. I just got her back. Apparently that is a very sophisticated way of saying eat it.
Well, the only thing about that, if you don't make it restricted to the Senate, you have the evidence beyond any doubt that you attempted to give notification. Yeah.
But it is, and I can't remember what we pay every time we send one of those out. And, but in my business, we're very shaky about canceled policies and that sort of thing. So many times when one is, even though the company is really responsible, we go ahead and send out a letter, and I think it's $2 or $3 every time we send one of those out. And if the problem I have with leaving it in is, if we're going to leave it in, then shouldn't we go back and require it with the Western Oregon severance tax? I mean, consistency seems to be worth something here, and to leave it in here and not go back doesn't seem to be consistent, and to leave it in here without taking it out doesn't seem to be.
I was going
to
move that amendment anyway, Mr. Chairman, so we got to it.
To go back and add it to?
So they are consistent.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we ought to allow Senator Day to read Gone with the Wind while...
Yeah! I asked for a chapter that wasn't, and he brought me the whole goddamn
Well,
thing.
What is that? I would like to know more about the cost involved, because...
I'm not sure either, Mr. Chairman, but I can assure you that it's cheaper than personal service, and we're not asking that.
I don't know. You haven't seen the new postal rates in total.
Mr. Chairman,
it's going to be Messenger Bob's U.S. Mail Service.
Senator, there may be good reasons for putting registered mail in to the Western collections as well, and that may be very expensive. My real concern, the testimony was that the cost differential with regard to Eastern is small because there's not that many accounts. And I'm concerned if we believe in what this bill is doing otherwise, I'm concerned that taking this out will be a red flag politically, and will, you know, be another reason for somebody maybe to oppose the bill. And even though it would maintain an inconsistency, I would at very least prefer to leave the registered mail in. And if we're in work session and you'd like a motion on it.
Well, we're not. We're going to come back to a work session. When we're dealing with something that has the language like these first few sections, I like to let it sit on the table while sometimes the dust forms around certain sections. Many times the department might find something they'd like to change before it leaves here anyway. Okay. But what I would like to ask the department to do, if they could, would be to give us an estimate, both by what it would cost to leave registered mail in the Eastern Oregon, and what it would cost if you have some way of just roughly calculating the biennial costs if we added it back into the Western Oregon, so that we would have some kind of a figure here that we could deal with.
I assume that the intention
would
not be to add it back to the income tax
provision. No.
Just the
timber. I think since that's... Yeah. And again, you get to the consistency thing, and it's one of the reasons I'm not... If I follow the collections procedure right, I think to require it on the end... Is something that for somebody that's got an overdue tax account, I wonder if the rest of the taxpayers appreciate a state agency having to come up with the money to send a special kind of letter to somebody who's been delinquent and been notified and gone through a hearings process or had the opportunity to go through a hearings process. I wonder if they appreciate that money being spent in this way, particularly when their zoning on their lands changed, they don't even get a regular letter telling them of that. So I just,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day. I just going through, and I shouldn't have gotten Gone with the Wind out, but I think you should check your references and what you're referencing. Where's the department? Are they still there? I'm not sure. Some of those sections are no longer in existence, so you better double check your references, okay?
That's on page 3, lines 10 through 12.
Yeah, 311, 673, and right on through, okay?
Yes, I'll be happy to.
I always get a little nervous when you start repealing sections and adding. I think there's some conflict there. You may want to double check it, okay?
Okay, anybody else like to testify on Senate Bill 68?
Okay. Frankly, I don't give a damn.
Yes. Seeing none, we will move on, and we'll get that from the department, that information, when we deal with 68 in a work session. Next bill. Quick little hearing on Senate Bill 48. We have with us the Department of Transportation, or at least one member thereof. You're going to explain this little bill to us?
10 words or less.
Oh, okay.
We operate.
I'll try, Senator Powell.
Quickly.
Senator Powell, committee. I'm Lloyd Henyon, Manager of Financial Planning and Economic Services, Department of Transportation. I will make this brief today. Senate Bill 48 makes two changes in the use fuel tax law, both of which are fairly simple and straightforward. In Section 1, the definition of fuel is revised to remove references to the internal combustion engine. The purpose for this change is to allow for the taxation of fuel used in a steam-powered vehicle. A steam vehicle does not use fuel in an internal combustion engine. The fuel is burned outside the engine to heat the propellant liquid to create the steam which powers the vehicle. Under existing statutes, we have no authority to tax the fuel used by steam vehicles. This is not that we anticipate any great shift to steam vehicles, but we do believe that all road users should share in the paying of the roads, including steam vehicles. Therefore, Section 2 of this bill establishes a gallonage equivalencies for compressed natural gas for tax purposes. While this is new language in the statute, it is not a new concept. The fuel tax branch, in fact, of the Motor Vehicles Division of the Department has been taxing compressed natural gas in this manner in its administrative rules. The Department does not anticipate that either
of
these changes...
What kind of tax is that by rule?
It's a tax on compressed natural gas, which establishes an equivalency between compressed natural gas and
gasoline. Okay, now is there a current reason for that that ratio figure being used? Do you already have a tax of some sort?
Yes, it's 100 cubic feet of compressed natural gas measured at 14.73 pounds per square inch of pressure at 60 degrees Fahrenheit. It's taxable at the same rate as a gallon of fuel.
Okay, that's in the bill.
Yeah,
I understand that but
right.
How was that derived? Did you already use that figure?
Yes, we've already been using that figure by administrative rule, and that's because it's the equivalency in BTUs.
Mm-hmm. But do you use that figure for what purpose by rule?
For the purpose of taxing compressed natural gas.
Okay, just period. What do you tax it for?
For use...